This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Wednesday, October 26th. I'm Angela Denning. State politicians are asking the governor to include Southeast in the state's requests for pink salmon disaster relief. The Walker administration is already seeking federal disaster declarations for commercial pink salmon fisheries in Prince William Sound, Kodiak, Chignik, and the Lower Cook Inlet. Statewide, the catch of pink salmon this year was nearly 40 million fish. State Representatives Jonathan Christ Tompkins, Dan Ortez, and Senator Bert Stedman have made the request. Christ Tompkins says he's heard about the tough season from fishermen in his district.
From talking with fishermen on the docks and them reaching out to me and coffee shop conversations, everything, I mean, people are feeling the hurt, especially people that are new into the fisheries and have high debt exposure and may even be diversified, but are seeing those other fisheries like Dungeness not coming through in the way they have historically.
In Southeast, the catch this year topped 18 million pinks, well below the 34 million forecast and well below last year's harvest of 34 million. This year's catch was not the lowest in the past two decades. 2006 saw a region-wide harvest of more than 11.5 million. This year's catch also surpassed the harvest from 2008. Christ Tompkins says the value of this year's catch in Southeast compared to the five-year average does meet eligibility standards for a disaster declaration by the National Marine Fisheries Service. He argues it's an issue of fairness.
So I guess my thinking is, if there's going to be a disaster declaration, because other parts of Alaska, you know, were hurting this summer as well, I'd darn well like to see Southeast Alaska included, or there be a very good reason not to.
A disaster declaration could lead to federal funding or other aid for people involved in the fisheries. Alaska received federal disaster relief in 2012 for fisheries on the Yukon and Kuskokwim Rivers and Cook Inlet. No word yet from the governor's office about the request. And Sitka Democrat Jonathan Christ Tompkins is facing a challenger from his hometown in the race to represent House District 35. The district includes Petersburg, as well as Angoon, Hoona, Cake, Pelican, Craig, Klawak, and Northern Prince of Wales Island communities. The 27-year-old won his seat in 2013 after leaving Yale University early to run for office. He works as a nonprofit administrator. He's making the argument that the Republican-led majority in the House has been ineffective in passing a fiscal plan and says he's been able to do more for the district as part of the House minority. Joe Vicknicki spoke with Christ Tompkins during a recent visit to Petersburg and started out with a question about his involvement in proposed changes to the justice reform bill sought by lobbyist Tim Grusendorf.
As I understand it, you were a sponsor on a possible change to that bill. Can you tell me about your involvement in that proposed change, what you knew about the case that Tim was trying to address with that lobbying?
Yeah, it was a messy and unideal situation. So I was on the Judiciary Committee, and I'd been getting contact from, well, people throughout the law enforcement and criminal justice community, but in particular some attorneys who had done criminal law, who were flagging this issue in general. And after they had been in touch, Tim also got in touch, as he did with many, although I don't think all members of the Judiciary Committee, as well as some members not on Judiciary. And he was lobbying and, you know, relating his personal relationship, I guess, with some of these criminal statutes. I don't know what the letter of legislative law is in terms of what leg employees can and cannot do, but certainly the appearance is far from ideal, and I think the committee was ultimately responsive to that, and what we ended up doing is passing there's the Criminal Justice Commission, which is sort of this blue ribbon task force of retired judges, law enforcement officers, victims, advocates, etc. And so we sort of sent the whole issue beyond just what Tim was particularly interested in, but the issue at large to the Criminal Justice Commission for them to review, which felt like a more clean and objective sort of path forward.
Your opponent in this race is knocking on doors and trying to make the argument for having someone in State House who has more life experience and who is older, as well as being a member of the Republican-led majority that was in place. In terms of the life experience and age issue, do you have a response when you're out on the campaign trail? Do you make a case for why someone younger should be in this seat?
Guilty as charged. I'm 27 years old. That criticism, I think, is entirely factual and objective. I bring the work ethic of a mule. I mean, I work morning till night on behalf of the people I represent, and I care incredibly about them, the people in our district that I represent, and the future of this state. I'd argue that there's just as much as someone of any age is able to represent a district in the Alaska legislature. There are advantages for people of all backgrounds. And I mean, certainly I have a strong motive to make sure that the state is solvent and prosperous for people well younger than myself, even, that I want to see Alaska around and vibrant for generations beyond my own. And you could argue that's an advantage for my age. But I think, to be fair, anyone can and should be feeling that way, regardless of how old they are. I mean, I think the argument that we need more older people, I mean, the average age in the legislature is 65. If we needed, you know, if simply age correlated to legislative performance, ideally we wouldn't have a $3.3 billion budget deficit right now. You know, I think it's a shallow criticism. Ideally, you're judged by the quality of your performance in the legislature, and I have worked darn hard, and I do my honest best, and I'm proud of what I've done the last 4 years.
Well, Sheila also brings up the spending that the House minority argued for, including public broadcasting, Alaska Marine Highway, K-12 education, and really held out for in this last session, and makes the case that that money isn't around, and the state can't afford to keep spending at that level and spending out of the constitutional budget reserve. Do you disagree? Is there a way that Alaska can still pay for these services, whether you think they're core or important or not? Is that justifiable?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I disagree with that for two reasons. I mean, first, as a, I guess, a consistency observation, I mean, one issue and, you know, purported criticism in this campaign has been that, you know, in my current status in the legislature, I can't be effective, yet this is a criticism that I've been too effective in securing funds for this district, and you can't have it both ways. It is factual that, yeah, these monies have been secured through my and my colleagues' efforts, and they're important to this district. To, I think, the substance of the criticism, it's really important to put it in context. The budget is getting cut, and dramatically so, and I think it all comes down to equitability. And I don't want to see the budget balanced on the back of rural and coastal Alaska, and these are programs disproportionately important to our region, which, by the way, does not have a whole heck of a lot of representation. And I am more than pleased to use the leverage that I have, which, by the way, is not insignificant, to advocate the interests of our district in the legislature, and that includes funding for the ferry system, for public radio, for domestic violence and sexual assault prevention, ADF&G, and on and on. And putting those numbers in context, everything is getting cut. Everything I just mentioned is still getting cut year over year. It's just a question of whether it's getting completely clobbered or it's just going to be more moderately cut.
That's Sitka Democratic State Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins. There's a longer version of this interview on our website, kfsk.org. The general election is Tuesday, November 8th. Absentee voting is underway. It can be done in person at the Petersburg Public Library from 11 to 3 until November 7th. Voters can also have an absentee ballot mailed to them by filling out a form on the state's website at elections.alaska.gov. In Sitka, the Gary Paxton Industrial Park Board has chosen a contractor to build a multi-purpose dock at the facility to be completed by January 2018. The dock would primarily support the freight and fishing industries. Space will also be available for in-water commercial boat work. Park Director Gary White is excited about all the services the floating dock could provide, such as locations to transfer freight and fish, and for commercial boat work to be done in the water.
We're getting closer to having a dock that's going to meet the needs of what folks have told us in public meetings, and I think it's going to be a home run for the industrial park and to help the economy here.
The dock got its start back in 2012 when Sitka received a $7.5 million legislative grant from the state. The city spent the money on consultants and geotechnical work to outline the project and requested bids come under $6.8 million. The board then put out an RFP and received four proposals in August. All four were over that $6.8 million threshold. So, rather than ask the Sitka Assembly for more money, the board asked the consultants to go back to the drawing board and seek a cheaper design. In September, the board received proposals from three of those firms that provided six design options, ranging from $6.2 million to $9.3 million. The board then chose Turnagain Marine Construction Corporation as the best value option for Sitka. When asked if there is capacity at the dock for a full-service marine haul-out, White said he'd prefer private industry finance such a dock.
If we want to follow what Wrangell did in Hoonah, we're going to have a big cash injection. And right now with the city, state, and federal budgets, that's kind of unlikely.
But White speculated perhaps marine contractors could jumpstart a haul-out down the line. The city will now hammer out a design-build contract with Turnagain Marine Construction, which will require approval from both the GPIP board and the Sitka Assembly. For a few days this week, the halls of the Haynes School are filled with music. Around 150 students from 10 schools throughout the region are in town for the Southeast Alaska Honor Music Festival. Abby Collins has more from Haynes.
The school sounds a little different today. The normal chatter of students in the halls is met with music. A string ensemble, choir, and a full band practice separately in different parts of the school.
These are the best students from the region.
Jason Messino is the music director for grades 5 through 12 in Haynes. He's also running this year's Honor Music Festival. The three-day event brings high school student musicians from around Southeast together to perform as one group.
It's a great experience because, first of all, the kids don't all know each other, and they're getting to perform with other students who are doing the same thing in their own schools, but now they're getting to do it together, so there's a social end of it.
But Messino says that's not all that's new for the students.
They're also working with conductors that they're not familiar with, so they're getting different experiences, different learning experiences.
The festival is a pretty exclusive event. Students have to go through an audition process and be selected to take part. From Haynes, 14 students were chosen.
Students need to make CDs. Each director brings those CDs to a meeting which is held at the end of September, and the directors all meet and select the groups.
The gym is doubling as a rehearsal space and lodging. The band plays there during the day, and students sleep there at night. Half of the room is filled with luggage, blankets, even a few air mattresses. The other half, chairs, music stands, and instruments. Christopher Lujan is a junior from Juneau. He's performing as a tenor too in the choir, and this is his third year taking part in the festival.
I believe our conductor has picked very good pieces that challenge you to a point where you have to think about what you're singing, and you have to combine it all together. And since we're all coming from different locations with different amounts of preparation, it's cool to see it all come together.
He says being chosen to participate really is an honor.
Nothing can compare. I mean, I love the music, love the people who are here. I like meeting new people and interacting.
But taking part in the festival means a long 3 days of rehearsing and performing. Here's Messino.
We've got about 6 hours of rehearsals yesterday, about 9 hours today, another couple hours tomorrow, and then by our dress rehearsal in the afternoon, it's all going to come together.
Alexandra Bless is a senior at Petersburg High School. She plays the clarinet in the band, and this is her third year participating.
I guess I've gotten more experience doing it. I'm used to the long practices, but I still enjoy it just as much as I did first time.
She's in the gym with Jasmine Iremia, a junior from Petersburg who is taking part in the choir for the first time as an Alto One.
I've never sang in choirs outside of our Petersburg choir, but I think it's really neat to come, and everyone here is, like, invested in choir.
Messino says so far the music festival is going well.
I think you can hear in the background we got great music going on. Everyone's enjoying it. The kids are a bit tired, especially the ones traveling from south. But I think everyone's having a great time. There's lots of smiles. They slept in school last night, so they're a little bit weary from that. But it's a hard work, but it's a lot of fun.
The sound of the strings, choir, and band come together as students rehearse in Haynes. And it's all in preparation for one concert, combining the music and skills of students around Southeast. Reporting in Haynes, I'm Abby Collins.
And I'm Angela Denning. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. Thanks for listening.